I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
We're delighted to have with us somebody who can answer some of your questions a lot better than I can, because he's a real attorney and everything. I just play one in my dreams, but I always let you know that I'm not, so I guess I can dream, right? John Flynn is with us, and the phone number is 803-0930 in the 716, 803-0930, star 930 on the cell, and toll-free 1-800-616-WBEN. John Flynn, great to talk with you again, and I wish it was under a better set of circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. Good to hear from you. Thanks.
Well, first things first, give us your overall take on everything that you have seen, especially starting off with the police response and the preliminary basic investigation, such as the crime scene.
Well, I think that the one word that I would say kind of covers the whole thing here is strange. I think that this is a very, very strange case from a number of different aspects. First and foremost, again, we're not privy to any of the ransom notes that have been sent to these media outlets. But, I mean, from what we can gather here, there is no proof that this poor woman's alive. There's no proof of life here at all. And when you're negotiating or you're looking for someone in a kidnapping investigation, the very first thing that you want to have is some kind of proof of life. And in this situation right here, we're 9 days and we don't have any. Now, again, like I said, we're not privy to any of the ransom notes at all. So there may be some evidence that we don't know about that there's proof of life. But based upon what we heard, there's none. So that's strange, number one, right there, that we're 9 days into this and we haven't even got that. Number two is that the negotiating here is not with law enforcement. It's with a local affiliate TV station there in Tucson, Arizona. And the notes are being sent there, or the communication is being sent there, and then it's being related to law enforcement. That's not usual. That's strange. Again, that's the one word I'll keep going back to here. And then, thirdly, as you alluded to initially, the crime scene here was not kept. I don't know what happened. I don't want to cast dispersions on the local sheriff's department, but when you prematurely close down a crime scene and then you have to reopen it again a few days later, and then from my understanding, you close it again, and then you reopen it again for a third time, all you're doing is contaminating the scene. And right now, when the FBI is in there and other law enforcement agencies are in there, they don't have a crime scene that is as it was on early Sunday morning hours of February 1st. So those are just three of the many aspects of this thing that go back to my one word here, strange.
Okay. Well, John, my very brief time in the police academy, I do remember somebody saying, look, you only have one chance to get a crime scene right, so just call the detectives. Don't screw it up.
Absolutely. I mean, I guarantee that, the FBI, they didn't get there right away, obviously. They would have loved to have been the first ones on the scene. And again, that's not casting dispersions on the Pima County Sheriff's Department here, because again, let's play devil's advocate here, Tom. All right.
Okay.
We're in a society here where elderly people go missing a lot. Unfortunately, dementia and Alzheimer is an illness that affects a lot of our elderly people in this country, and people wander off. People take walks. People get confused. Law enforcement, on a regular basis, gets 911 calls from family members or friends saying that their elderly loved one is missing. Happens all the time. And what happens is that law enforcement responds to the call and they treat it as a routine missing persons situation. They don't treat it as a kidnapping. Now, again, we can ask ourselves the question, should they? I mean, should every missing person case, every 911 call that is generated, you know, throughout our society when an elderly loved one wanders off, be treated as a kidnapping? I don't know, maybe now it will be. But, you know, I can see how perhaps Sheriff's Department got there and just treated this as a routine missing person case initially.
Yeah, that, John, I think that is an excellent point that you raised, because it's easy in hindsight to look back now that we know it's a major, you know, Class A felony, I think, in pretty much every state, that things could have probably been done a little different. And had they known exactly what they were getting into when they began the crime scene investigation, probably I'd imagine they would have called in some outside resources, maybe from Phoenix or maybe the feds. Who knows?
Sure. You know, and obviously what my understanding as well is that there were, every law enforcement agency has manpower issues as well. And apparently there were some manpower issues with the aircraft that they have in Pima County. I assume it's helicopters, but, you know, I don't know them. I'm not there. But apparently the pilot who, you know, was responsible for, you know, their air surveillance there was recently let go. And they had, you know, some manpower problems there, that where there was a delay in getting the aircraft up and, you know, hovering over the scene, that, you know, a number of hours went by before that happened. So, unfortunately, there were a few, you know, things that happened early on that obviously they would like to get back.
John Flynn, former Erie County DA on News Radio 930 WBEN. You can get your questions in if you want, or I'm more than happy to talk to John the entire hour by myself, but I'm making John available for your questions because he's a smart dude. 803-0930 in the 716, star 930 on the cell phone, and 1-800-616-WBEN. John, the question came up last week about DNA evidence, and they put out a rush DNA profile, get this done as soon as you can. And the question arose about the private sites such as 23andMe and the DNA people. I don't know if you ever dealt with this when you were the DA of Erie County, but in order to get a search warrant to go into the private databases, what level of judge would have to sign off on that, and what would you need to show in order to have a judge sign off on a search warrant with the private DNA databases? Because I would think that if you uncover DNA and it does not match in the criminal justice database, that exigent circumstances might perhaps be a exigent circumstances, and the threat of the kidnapping situation or the abduction situation might.
The Second World War is the largest event in human history.
A 20-part series with Tom Hanks.
No part of the globe was untouched. No life unchanged.
Experience the ultimate account of World War II.
Every single person had a story. These are the stories that make us who we are.
Listen to World War II with Tom Hanks on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Could that edge a judge into signing it? What do you have to show in order to get the judge
these companies that, you know, these private companies that deal with that, they're pretty tight about giving that stuff up. And, you know, there's always problems with, you know, people who voluntarily give their DNA to these private companies, they don't consent to have it released, okay? So there are a lot of hurdles that are out there where you're most likely not going to be able to get this information unless the person is in the national FBI database here. You know, again, but obviously DNA is a, you know, going to be a huge component here. And listen here, there's always anyone who gives DNA in any kind of situation can always consent to allow their DNA to be used. But, you know, unless, you know, I'm not sure exactly how it works, but from what I recall, unless you had some kind of a consent provision that you file with one of these private companies, you're most likely not going to be able to get at that.
Not even with a search warrant, contingent, of course, on convincing a judge at some level that one should be issued. Correct.
Well, you would have to subpoena it. Okay, so you could subpoena the records from one of these private companies. But again, the private company is going to go to court most likely and fight that subpoena, and then you would have to have a judge rule on whether or not the company would have to turn it over. So, you know, again, I can't remember a time where these private companies, you know, did not fight a subpoena.
Wow. Well, you think back to how Altemio Sanchez, the bike path killer, was fought, and that was just incredible investigative work by the Erie County Sheriff's Department, I believe, going to that
Absolutely.
Restaurant in Amherst on Main Street and salvaging his cutlery. That was amazing how they did that.
Oh, yeah. No. That's the kind of stuff that's going on right now behind the scenes. So, you know, you just saw recently, either yesterday or today, this morning, you know, the law enforcement was back at Savannah Guthrie's sister's home, Annie. So Annie Guthrie, you know, the other daughter of Nancy here, that was the last place where Nancy was at on night, January 31st. She was over there for dinner, presumably, that evening, and then she was driven home. Now, the news reports say family members. I saw one news report that said it was, the brother-in-law, which, you know, Annie's husband, drove her home, you know, that night, that Saturday night, January 31st. So, you know, you're going to want to go back. They went back, like I said, today or yesterday. They went back to Annie's house, the daughter's home, 9 days later, 8 days later. So, you know, did they go back because they missed something, or did they go back because they got a lead? You know, we're never going to know, obviously. We can presume probably that they probably got a lead.
Before I go into how the police investigate in a situation like this, starting with the crime scene, and then obviously first looking at the people who are closest to Nancy Guthrie, I want to address something that you said about this being a strange case because demands were sent to a third party, in this case, a media outlet in Tucson. But in the Lindbergh kidnapping, it was kind of the same situation because Charles Lindbergh was notified that his son was being held for a ransom, a direct letter to him, but then subsequent negotiations actually were the result of a newspaper ad that was put in by a guy named John Condon, who happened to have been the principal of the high school where Dutch Schultz, the gangland boss, attended way back when. But John Condon did a lot of the negotiation, and he was the guy who met Cemetery John in the Lindbergh case. So I mean, this does have some precedent, yes.
Yeah, no, interesting, yeah. It's still very unusual, though. I mean, you know, the vast majority of the time, you're going to have direct law enforcement involvement in dealing with the kidnappers.
It is 5:23 at News Radio 930 WBEN. So the way I look at it is, if they're investigating this in Tucson, the first thing they want to do is secure the crime scene and be meticulous in going through the crime scene. We already know that perhaps left something to be desired, but you've offered a theory as to why things might have been a little bit sloppy, because you can't treat every missing 84-year-old as if they're a kidnap victim. So point taken on that. But after you've done the crime scene, first thing you'd want to do, I would think, isn't it standard to look very closely at anybody who knew Nancy Guthrie, starting with her own family? Isn't that how it's done?
Absolutely. I mean, I remember in all my years as DA, you know, I would have, you know, numerous people come up to me and say, you know, hey, John, is it safe to go downtown? Is it safe to go here? Is it safe to go there? And I would always tell people, Tom, yes, because the overwhelming majority of the time, crime occurs with people who know one another.
Yes.
Yes. Do random people get mugged? Do random people get shot? They do. Don't. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. Okay. But the overwhelming majority of the time, I would say probably 90% of all the shootings that occurred in my 8 years as district attorney, the person who shot that person, they knew them. They were buddies, associates, whatever, okay? So crime occurs with people who know one another. That's just a fact, okay? So, I mean, you know, is it fair to, like, look at the family right away? Of course not, okay? But you always start there. You start with the last place she was at. Who was the last person who was with her? Who was the last person that saw her? And in this case right here, it appears the last place she was at before she was in her home and taken from her home was her daughter's house. And the last person that she saw was her son-in-law, her daughter's husband. So you start right there. You start questioning them. What did you see? What happened? What time did she get here? What time did she leave? How'd you drop her off? Did you take her in the house? What happened when he got in the house? I mean, you go through everything step by step, bit by bit. And then, as you said, when, you know, you get there and after you interview all the people who were close to her and with her, especially in the last 24 hours before she was abducted here, you scour the crime scene. Here's another thing strange too, Tom, okay? Mm-hmm. Today, 9 days later, well, I think, no, take it back, it happened last night. 8 days later, they tow her car away from the scene.
Yeah.
I mean, why didn't they tow their car, Nancy Guffey's car away on day one? Why would they let her car sit there at the residence for 8 days? Again, they may have a good reason, but I'm going to want to take that car in the lab, okay, and have that car, you know, scoured, you know, and taken for every, try to get any fingerprint or any DNA, anything I can get out of that car, I want to take right away. And they waited 8 days to tow the car away until last night. Again, a little bit strange, but they might have a good answer for it, but I thought it was strange.
Sometimes I wonder if these people have ever watched Law and Order or the first 48, because it's almost like we know this stuff from watching TV. It's Bowerly. We're talking about the Nancy Guthrie abduction, and we're delighted to have with us as our guest former Erie County DA John Flynn. And your questions, comments for Mr. Flynn, obviously, 803-0930, *930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. John Flynn, a 1995 graduate of UB Law. So my daughter was 4 years old when you graduated, and she graduated, I forget the year, but somewhat after you, John, just so you're aware. John Flynn is with us. Yeah, she's doing great. By the way, I must say, I never thought, did you ever think you'd see the day when American Badass himself, Kid Rock, would be held out as wholesome entertainment? Come on. What happened?
Absolutely.
We got old, baby. We got old.
I know. We get old.
I mean, my goodness. Anyway, let's get into, you were talking about the strange things that have been associated with this Guthrie case, and we were talking about the family, and I just want to prompt you because I've had people calling in saying the daughter, that Annie, seems off. The son-in-law seems off. As a DA who was involved in investigation and making sure the investigations were done in a way that was going to hold up in court and not be spoiled by the forbidden fruit of bad evidence, how much weight do you put on people's interpretations of, well, this person isn't reacting like somebody who's upset?
Well, I put a lot of weight on trained law enforcement officials who say that. So if I have a seasoned Buffalo Police Department homicide detective, you know, who comes in the DA's office and tells us, hey, you know, I just interviewed the cousin, and you know what? Something's funny about that cousin. I give that a lot of credibility, quite frankly. I give a lot of credibility to people who are out there and professionals who do this every day and who question people and evaluate people's character and responses to particular situations. That's what they do. That's what they're trained for. But you know, again, what you see on TV and what you see, you know, in a Zoom interview, I wouldn't, you know, read anything into that. You know, obviously, you know, people are upset. People act differently when they're upset. Their mother's missing here. You know, I wouldn't, you know, quite frankly, you know, put anything on any family members just upon, you know, an appearance, you know, that you see on TV in a Zoom interview or in a social media video post. I would obviously take what a trained law enforcement official told me is suspicious or funny. But again, going back to what I said before the break there, Tom, don't just because you look at the family members first and foremost, or friends or close associates, you know, it doesn't mean they're guilty.
That's exclusionary.
It just means that's where you go first. You start there.
Right. I mean, I would say that is an exclusionary technique. You start with the most likely.
Absolutely.
You rule them out so you can move on, correct?
Correct. Absolutely. No doubt about it. I mean, but, you know, in this situation right here, let's be honest, okay, the family has to cooperate. I mean, if there is no cooperation amongst the family members here, then that's a red flag right there. So what we've seen over the course of the past 8 or 9 days here, you know, 9 days now, is that, you know, we've seen a number of searches being done of the residence. Nancy Guthrie's residence, they took her car today, like I said before, and they've searched Annie's house too. So obviously all of these searches were done with the consent of the parties involved. So, I mean, there's only two ways law enforcement can get into your house, okay? You either got to go get a judge and get a search warrant, and then you can go in with based upon a search warrant, or the owner of the property gives you consent. There's a third way, exigent circumstances, okay?
Right?
Yeah, but third way, but put that aside. There's obviously been consent searches here, okay? So that means that the family's being cooperative.
Let's go to Bobby in Tonawanda. Bobby, you are on with former Erie County DA John Flynn. Welcome to the show, Bobby.
Hi, Tom. Hi, John.
Hey, Bobby.
I have a couple questions to ask you that I'm just suspicious of this whole thing. Number one, they said that Savannah, before she called the police, she called a Congress friend of hers, a congressman. That's number one, before she called the police. Number two, the reporters are the ones that spotted the blood, not the police. And number three is they said she hadn't been to church in weeks, and they said she went every week, you know. And then the other thing is all these letters they're getting, and they want to make a deal, and yet they haven't made a deal. I don't understand it. Something doesn't sound right.
So let's start with the congressman. You know, a lot of times, people, before they call law enforcement authorities, if they have a friend who is in government, who has, you know, some kind of influence, you know, in government, all right, they may want to call them to say, hey, I'm about to call law enforcement here. Do you happen to know who the Pima County sheriff is? A lot of people, you know, in my 8 years as DA, a lot of people who wanted to get to me would call someone who knew me and said, hey, you got John Flynn's number. I need to call John Flynn about something personal or private here. Okay. That happens a lot. So, you know, I wouldn't, you know, view the congressman thing, you know, too funny. It was probably just more of a, you know, I don't want to just call 911 randomly. You got a number for the sheriff, or you got a number for the DA, someone who I can like call directly. That may have been why she did that. As far as who spotted the blood first, again, you know, there were things about the original crime scene that were, like I said before, strange. Okay, so for perhaps someone finding of a law enforcement official, that doesn't necessarily mean that law enforcement, you know, didn't do a thorough job. But you know, it's a big piece of property there, and you know, something can be missed. The third thing you mentioned, as far as church, I had not heard that she had been missing for church for a while. What information that I read and what I've seen being reported is that she missed Sunday church last Sunday, February 1st. So the information that I saw, Bobby, was that she only missed one church, and they found that suspicious. I did not hear that that she had missed multiple churches.
The Recap Show is an inside look into the world of global soccer and women's sports.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Bobby, thank you very much. We appreciate the phone call. John Flynn is with us. 803-0930 is the phone number, *930 on the cell phone, 1-800-616-WBEN. And John, one of the things I think that we should probably bring out here is reporters are only as good as their sources and the information, and sometimes even official spokesmen make mistakes. So the bit about not being in church for not 1 week but several weeks, about the reporters spotting the blood, these are not probative facts at this point. They're reports, but they're not proven, correct?
Absolutely correct. I mean, all we can go by, I mean, that's a caveat throughout all this conversation. I mean, obviously, you and I are sitting here in Buffalo, New York. We have not seen any of the ransom notes. We have not seen any of the crime reports. I have not talked to one official in Tucson, Arizona. I was actually friends with the old DA, but Barbara LaWall, she was a DA in Pima County there in Tucson. She retired in 2020. I knew her through my association with the National DA Association. Barbara's been gone now for 6 years now. But I have not spoken to Barbara LaWall at all, the former DA out there. So I'm not privy to any information at all. I'm basically here giving you my educated guess.
And that's a lot of crimes have been solved based on educated guesses as well as intuition and investigative excellence. John Flynn is with us on News Radio 930 WBEN. Let me ask you about and we're talking with John Flynn, obviously, about the Nancy Guthrie abduction and the time is ticking away, what was supposed to be the 0 hour for Nancy Guthrie. Let me ask you this. Are we talking about a perpetrator or perpetrators, singular or plural?
It's hard to tell.
Most likely. I would say it's going to be plural because even if it's an 84-year-old lady, that's going to require some heavy lifting. I remember taking care of my mother, trying to lift her off the floor was not easy.
No, absolutely. I mean, everyone who's got an elderly relative knows that. It's going to be, listen here, there's most likely more than one person involved because, again, people by their very nature like to talk. And people, by their very nature, like to bring other people into their own situations. There are loners out there. There are individuals out there who have mental illness, obviously. Who are living in their own world. And it very well could be someone. But Tom, also. One of the things that we got to keep in mind here, a possibility, is that we don't know definitively whether or not any of these ransom notes are legit.
Right.
These ransom notes could be from some goofball out there, randomly calling a TV station. Now, going back to my little phrase there before, my educated guess, my intuition, is that it's probably not that, based upon the last video the family gave late yesterday, because that
Savannah did put out one. Savannah herself put out one at about three, four o'clock today.
But Savannah, and she was flanked by her sister and brother. Last one I saw there. Okay, where it appears that the FBI wrote the text for that video. I'd be shocked if they didn't, okay? Because the language that she used was very cryptic, it was direct, and it had some words in there that would lend a reasonable investigator to believe that the ransom note was legit.
What words should we look for or listen to?
She used the word "will pay." Okay, so that was very specific. Okay, at the end of the video, she made it clear that we will pay. Okay, which the FBI probably wanted to have in there to send a message to the kidnappers that we're legit here in far as we have the money, and therefore don't harm Nancy.
John, I don't think there's going to be a happy outcome to this, and no. I will tell you why. Because as you pointed out, there has been no proof of life that we are aware of. Number two, the authorities were talking on Friday about putting billboards up in Arizona. If they had any good leads, why would they even be mentioning that they might be putting up billboards? It doesn't make any sense. No proof of life. And the other thing, like the Clutter family murders in cold blood, Hickok and Smith didn't leave any living witnesses. They killed the entire family, the mom, the dad, and the son and the daughter, murdered by these two misanthropic psychopaths. So I just don't think this is going to be good. And John, I also am concerned that we might never know what happened to Nancy Guthrie, because there's a lot of places in the desert to put something you don't want people to find. What are your thoughts on how this is going to resolve and if it's going to resolve?
So I think you bring up two great points. You know, the first, well, obviously, I said it from the get-go here, you know, at the beginning of the hour here, that there's no proof of life at all. I found it very interesting, though, Tom, that, you know, in the first message or two that the family, you know, issued their first videos, they said, show us that my mom is okay. Show us that she's alive and she's well, okay? If you noticed, the last video that the family put out, there was no proof of life request. And Savannah was extremely sober in her talk, and so were Annie and the brother. They were obviously, now again, being so somber, you know, and you know, it's not a, it doesn't mean any, or their mom is gone, obviously, or missing for 9 days now. But you know, if they had some proof that mom was still alive, all right, I don't know. I'd be a little bit more positive in my delivery of that message that we will pay. We want to celebrate with her. We want to see her. We're desperate to see her. But by not asking for any proof of life in their latest video, I guess it could go both ways. I guess the other way it could go that they got proof of life, but they're not sharing with the public.
Even if she is still alive, John, forgive me interrupting, but even if she still is alive, and I don't think she is, why would you go through this, be so meticulous, and then leave a living witness? I don't get that.
Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, another thing, Tom, what no one's talking about, okay, is that early on, from the get-go here, day one, 9 days ago, okay, the information that we got from the family was she needs her medication or she's not going to survive 24 hours. And then one of the other siblings, I don't know which one it was, you know, said that, you know, mom's in constant pain here, that mom cannot survive. So listen here, unless the kidnappers took her medication or went to Walgreens and got it, okay, you know, which I guess feasibly could happen, I guess. I mean, I don't know how you would get it. You know, you have to get it, you know, in someone else's name, obviously, and get a doctor, get a prescription for you. You know, unless they took the medication from the house with them, you know, no one's talking about the fact that, you know, this poor woman couldn't survive without her medication for 24 hours. And here we are 9 days later. So, I mean, I am not hopeful, unfortunately. I would not be surprised at the end of the day that this does not turn out well. I pray to God I'm wrong. I pray to God that she's found and she's well. But my gut tells me this is not going to end well.
And I'm not even sure that it's going to end with a conclusion that we found her remains or anything like that. John, thanks a million. It's been a pleasure speaking with you. We have to do this more because you have so much to offer based on your experiences, both legally and investigatively, forensically. So thank you very much. I appreciate you affirming much of what I've been saying. So because you know what you're talking about and I don't. So thank you kindly. And shoot me a text. If you don't have my phone on my phone, Tanner will take it off the.
I'll find you. I know how to find people.
Yeah, it's not that hard, but just make it easy. Tanner can make it easier. Just stick around for a second on hold. John Flynn, former Erie County DA on News Radio 930 WBEN.
I'm Anna Garcia, host of True Crime News, the podcast. Every week, we bring you in-depth coverage on cases making headlines, as well as those that go under the radar. Tune in for Murders That Defy Explanation, Mystery Seeking Exploration, and Shocking Secrets That Will Leave You Breathless. Each week, we honor the victims by going beyond the salacious in our search for justice. Crime never stops, and neither do we. Listen to True Crime News, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.